think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA. I woke up this morning, got myself a gun. Mom
always said I'd be the chosen one. Who is Devin Archer? He's the former best friend of Hunter Biden. He's been a business partner in countless deals, apparently, with China, Ukraine, Romania, and et cetera, down the list. He claims that then-VP Biden was on the phone with Hunter Biden during some of these foreign business calls. That would include the alleged speakerphone conversations that happened, according to some, often. Back in 2018, as Chad just referred, convicted on two felonies for defrauding a Native American tribe. He is waiting to serve that sentence behind bars. Hasn't happened yet.
Hasn't happened yet, but if you read a letter that was sent out over the weekend, it was as if the Department of Justice wanted Devin Archer behind bars so he could not testify before members of Congress. And then all of a sudden it hit the fan. Thanks for joining us. Here we are. Boy, did that go by in a hurry. July 31, 2023. Glad to have you, reminding you that every day, Monday through Friday, we do a live stream that you can always pick up either through Larry Connors USA Facebook or Larry Connors Twitter. Same thing, News Talk STL Facebook or News Talk STL Twitter, or through Rumble. That's noon hour. And then, of course, our 6 o'clock report here, where you can always follow what's happening at the latest at that point. So today, we have Devin Archer testifying behind closed doors. For now, we will not exactly know what he's saying, but eventually he's going to be in front of Congress to give a full detailed statement. But over the weekend, here's the key. Over the weekend, suddenly a letter got sent from the Department of Justice to the attorney for Devin Archer, basically suggesting that before he said anything to members of Congress, a judge should be actually sending him information about going to jail and penitentiary, suggesting lock him up before he can testify. At least that's the way it was taken by many when they first saw it. Congressman Comer.
It's odd that it was issued on a Saturday, and it's odd that it's right before he's scheduled to come in to have an opportunity to speak in front of the House Oversight Committee and tell the American people the truth about what really went on with Burisma. It's very troubling, and I believe that this is another violation of the law. This is obstruction of justice, but nevertheless, we're going to continue to move forward.
Then they are, and he started testifying earlier today behind doors of Congress. Now, this is a deposition, basically getting needed materials and information in front of members of the Oversight Committee, key members, so then they can have this deposition transmitted to other members of the Oversight Committee. And then when they have a full hearing with Devin Archer in the chair, in public view, they'll have better questions and better ammunition that they can use in that testifying. Because right now, this has been such a twisted tale and so many things hidden by the Department of Justice, by the way, that they want to get some better answers. And I think it's about time. But again, this letter that got sent the other day from the Justice Department on a Saturday, keep in mind, that they send to the judge and basically trying to say maybe when they sent this letter to a federal judge Saturday, maybe Archer should be put behind bars before he begins his testimony, because as you heard a moment ago, he'd gotten convicted in 2018 of securities fraud for swindling an Indian tribe as part of a scheme. So he was sentenced to 1 year and one day. Now, Hunter Biden had no part of that deal, but Devin Archer did, and he is due to report at some point to be sentenced and put away in prison. But the timing of that letter again, South Carolina Congresswoman Mace.
It's laughable.
to come out and say, oh, we sent you a letter on Saturday. Oh, by the way, God bless the post office, but they're about the only government agency that I know that would do something, you know, that works on Saturday. The Department of Justice sends out a letter on Saturday saying, Judge, you need to send the guy to jail when he's supposed to testify in front of a committee in Congress on Monday. And it's just, it's ridiculous, the timing of it. They had to backtrack. They had to.
They had to backtrack, and that was Guy Lewis, a former U.S. prosecutor, and they did backtrack. But before we explain how and why, South Carolina Congresswoman Mace on that letter.
This explosive letter that came out on Saturday. This is the Biden's, you know, DOJ henchman saying basically to Devin Archer, sure, you can do this interview with the Oversight Committee on Monday, but we're going to intimidate the witness before you do that. And I was just shocked when that letter came out on Saturday. I hope that Devin Archer will get in the room and tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and that interview will be released to the American people as soon as possible.
That's what we all want. We want everything released to us immediately, as soon as possible. And again, after they finish the closed hearing, the deposition is all compiled, and the members of Congress have seen it, and they're ready to bring him in front of them in a public hearing, then we'll begin to get some good, solid answers. Anything between now and then is going to be a lot of speculation. But references backtracking from that letter that the DOJ sent to the judge overseeing when Devin Archer is supposed to report to prison. Suddenly, because of the backlash, obviously, suddenly you have the DOJ and even Archer's attorney saying, well, that was not an attempt to intimidate him, really. In other words, they want you to believe that when we sent this letter out trying to get the judge to have him show up and stand behind bars before he goes to Congress, and or as a reminder that that's coming, it might be harsher yet, but at the same time, the DOJ suddenly says, that was not our intent. In fact, then his attorney joined in. The attorney for Devin Archer stating, we're aware of speculation that the Department of Justice weekend request to have Mr. Archer report to prison is an attempt by the Biden administration to intimidate him in advance of his meeting with the House Oversight Committee. To be clear, Mr. Archer does not agree with that speculation. In any case, Mr. Archer will do what he has planned to do all along, which is to show up Monday, honestly answer the questions put to him by the congressional investigators, which in fact he did. And as I say, the Department of Justice also denied the letter. Oh, no, we never meant to intimidate him. Now, you would expect that from this Department of Justice, to backtrack and say that was not the intent. But then the question is, why is Archer's attorney also backing off? Texas Congresswoman Dine.
If you were Archer's attorneys, you'd be saying the same thing because you're having to negotiate with those folks. You're going to, I'm sure, file another appeal. And these are the people that he's going to be negotiating with. So, of course, he's not going to hurl accusations at them as true as they may be. But, again, this is just a number of different ways that the DOJ has stood in between actually showing evidence that would convict the Bidens of crimes. We have seen this over and over again for at least 10 years. I'm on the Ways and Means Committee. We have heard from numerous whistleblowers now who have shown ways that leaders up in the IRS, DOJ, and FBI have squelched, absolutely squished down any attempts to be able to find the Bidens are guilty of any crimes. And here's the problem. Under the Trump administration, they were using fake dossiers. They were using FISA courts. They were using wiretaps, looking for smoke. Under the Bidens, they have found fire, and they've done everything they have to put it out. It's an absolute top-tier, two-tier system.
In other words, lies and conspiracy reports when they're trying to go after Trump, documents and facts involving Hunter Biden and Joe Biden. And in fact, James Comer revealing the family business bank, or rather the Biden family business, did have six other banks to flag more than 170 large amounts of monies and SARs to Treasury for review. Now, the SARs basically are suspicious activity reports, which banks must report to the Treasury Department. And he says 170, that's at least 20 more than are previously reported. And again, all of them apparently involve questionable exchanges of money. possible money laundering, fraud, other events. Devin Archer may be able to shed more light on that before he wraps everything up. On another subject, Kentucky Senator Rand Paul is referring Dr. Fauci to the Justice Department for allegedly lying to Congress.
Do you wish to retract your statement of May 11th where you claimed that the NIH never funded gain-of-function research in Wuhan?
Senator Paul, I have never lied before the Congress, and I do not retract that statement. This paper that you are referring to was judged by qualified staff up and down the chain as not being gain of function. So what was? Let me finish.
You take an animal virus and you increase its transmissibility to humans. Right. You're saying that's not gain of function?
Yeah, that is correct. And Senator Paul, you do not know what you are talking about, quite frankly.
I tell you, Dr. Fake just loves pointing that out. Senator Paul, you don't know what you're talking about, quite frankly. Well, we've never gotten exactly what Dr. Fake is talking about, other than lies, distortions, detours, misdirection. Do you remember? Do you remember when originally COVID virus began to surface? And we were told by Dr. Fake at that time, don't worry, not going to be a big deal. And then later said, oh, well, you know, don't bother getting any masks, they won't do you any good. And later admitted that was a lie because he was worried they would not have enough personal protection care for the first-line workers, first responders, hospital nurses, and that's understandable. We want them to be protected. But he lied about why you would or wouldn't need them and then insisted the mask would do you good. And then later admitted, well, that won't do it, so you need to have the shots that have been formulated under the high warp speed program that was created to get drugs to you. Those are the things that Trump put in place. Went to the pharmaceuticals and to members of the health department and said, what do we do to cut the red tape to get some possible ways to vaccinate against COVID? And they came up with the Warp Speed Project. But again, Dr. Fake told you, you just get that shot, you're going to be fine. Maybe you're going to need two shots. Maybe you're going to need a booster shot. In the end, it's not going to keep you from getting it. I personally, maybe you and others you know, got the shot, still got COVID. Got the booster, still got COVID. For some, I have no doubt it was life-saving. And for others, it's just inconvenience. And for some, it might have caused them to suffer a serious health crisis, possibly death. We might never know the full impact of those pharmaceuticals that we were being pushed to take. And it wasn't a matter that you could decide on your own. Remember the so-called, it's my body call, we hear from the left when it comes to abortion. When it came to the jab, it was not going to be your body. It was going to be what they told you to do with your body. And, of course, all the pharmaceuticals, at the best, were approved down to 6 months of age, but also approved for pregnant women, which is yet to make any sense to me, that if you're only going to approve the drug effective for children as young as 6 months, why would you allow pregnant women to be injected when they're carrying an unborn baby? But Dr. Fauci continually stating that I've never lied to Congress. And Senator Rand Paul now, as I said, referring some of his testimony to the Justice Department because possibly he did lie. What sparked the change? Well, there was an article that came up as reported by Sherry Markson, reporter in Australia and for Sky News. And she did an interview with one of the bosses of Fauci, Robert Kavlik. He was with the Department of Health. He is the one who helped create the Warp Speed program. And when she talked to Robert Kavlik, what he had to say in reference to Fauci and some of his statements, it all began to unravel.
The first is that he directly said that Anthony Fauci decided to protect his own reputation and the reputation of his institute, which was funding this risky coronavirus gain-of-function research at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And that's why Anthony Fauci was motivated to downplay any suggestions of a lab leak. And they had these conversations, deliberately deciding to downplay the rhetoric about the origins of the virus while they were trying to find out where it came from and encourage cooperation with Beijing. So this was, you know, in Robert Kablik's own admission, this is a deliberate decision to deflect attention away from the Wuhan lab. And he says he thinks Anthony Fauci was trying to protect his own interests. The second part to this, Ainsley, that was so fascinating, is that Robert Kablik said that their investigations indicate that it was vaccine research by the Chinese military in conjunction with the Wuhan Institute of Virology that they think led to the creation and outbreak of COVID-19.
That's pretty frightening stuff overall, isn't it? And Dr. Fauci knew all of that and was not sharing it with the American public. The actual referral that Senator Rand Paul sent to the DOJ reads this way. He said, "I write to urge the U.S. Department of Justice to open an investigation and a testimony made to the U.S. Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions by Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases," that's when he was, "on May 11, 2021. Now, that inquiry and information gathered up by the Washington Examiner went on to point out that Senator Paul had informed Merrick Garland, the Attorney General, of the comments made by molecular biologist Richard Abright, who said that research conducted by the Wuhan lab does, quote, match, indeed, epitomizes the definition of gain-of-function research concern. And that's why the federal funding was paused in 2014 through 2017. And we hopefully it still is. But this last weekend, Senator Paul told Fox News, reference Fauci, he's lying. He's lying about whether or not he funded gain-of-function research, and yes, he should be punished. But here's the issue. Merrick Garland heading up the Department of Justice. Garland can approve or deny the referral. The referral just requests an investigation. And even if he approves the investigation, he has controls over how deep it can go and how short it can be cut. In other words, there may be ways to derail it, not really carry out the full investigation. Once again, we're seeing an example of a two-tiered system of justice. This has been the way this administration has been operating from the beginning. And if you think it's going to change overnight, do not hold your breath. I will tell you this. If they ever do carry out a legitimate inquiry into Dr. Fauci, everything's going to be exposed. I mean, we're going to spill all the guts out on the table. And then we'll begin tracing the money, too, between him and various pharmaceutical companies. I don't think we want to just let this go by. A lot of folks say, I want to move past COVID. Do not move past what happened to others during COVID, and maybe you. Coming up, Biden says it is helping African Americans, the Biden White House. A new book says, really? Look at the facts. Plus a question for you. Are high school boys more conservative or liberal? Lock and load. Ready on the right. I want to share something special with you. I've told you how Wellington Environmental works to keep hospitals, schools, businesses safe for their patients, students, clients, employees. Wellington can do the same for you. Perfect example. A relative went to the basement, almost knocked over by the smell. A sewer line had broken. A call to Wellington, a crew was dispatched. First thing, make the home safe. Then clean up the mess. Truly clean it up. Now, I'm telling you this because I want the best for you. Wellington Environmental. Here's the number, 314 844-644-4930. 644-4930. AAA rating with the Better Business Bureau. 644-4930. Wellington Environmental. Your world. Cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington.
You can text Larry right now at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog. It's stupid, I'm a dog. You ain't nothing but a hound dog. It's stupid, I'm a dog. You can wag your tail, but I ain't gonna feed you no more.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Look at what they value and look at their budget and what they're proposing. Romney wants to let the, he said in the first 100 days, he's going to let the big banks once again write their own rules. Unchain Wall Street. They're going to put y'all back in chains.
Going to put y'all back in chains. That's Joe Biden when he was vice president, August 2012, speaking to a mixed audience, Reverend Mitt Romney and the GOP, talking about how we can do better for African Americans. Well, judging by the latest facts and a book written by Horace Cooper with Project 21, I don't think so. Joining us now is Horace Cooper, chair of Project 21. That's a black leadership network promoting African American values of family, country, and work. And the title of the book, Put You All Back in Chains. Horace, glad to have you on board.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on the program today.
Well, you bet. So when you're talking about how the Biden policies are hurting black Americans, that's not the story we get from the White House. We're making everything better. And let's begin with unemployment issues, that more blacks are employed and there's no disparity. Yes or no?
Okay, that's not true. It turns out that almost twice, as many black Americans are unemployed. The so-called employment gap has been widening between blacks and whites since Joe Biden. Black Americans are increasingly not seeing their employment levels drop the way the national employment rate has. When the president brags about how low the unemployment rate is, what he isn't saying is, except for black people.
Well, the whole point being, as we have heard from this White House, we're going to be transparent. But anytime you start trying to be transparent, the numbers are very clear. They're covering it with fog, smoke, mirrors, and lies.
Yes. So here's my point. When I identify how poorly black Americans have been doing, it is not because the policies in America today are hostile to black Americans in particular. What they are is they're hostile to hard work. They're hostile to the free market. They're hostile to growth. And people who are below average are doing worse as a result. That's true for all races. Black Americans are more likely to be in the lower class or lower income group, and as a consequence, they are suffering. If you make more than $350,000 a year, guess what? The Biden years have been amazing for you.
Yeah.
Most of us don't make more than $350,000 a year. And in fact, if you make under 40, the Biden years have been abysmal. Most black Americans, more than half of black Americans, make under $40,000 a year.
So Cornel West surfaces and suggests that he is the candidate for the Democrats. Your view of Cornel West versus Biden and Cornel West himself?
So Cornel West is a nice man. However, the reason that things have been so bad for black America is because it has been bad for America. And that is where government is picking winners and losers. Government regulates and taxes and controls. It is a sharp contrast to what policies we saw during the Trump administration. Cornel West says, we haven't taxed enough. We haven't regulated enough. We haven't controlled enough. So if regulation and taxation and control have been bad for America, what Cornel West is offering would be worse. The idea that you can transfer from whites and give to blacks isn't just immoral. What it will do is it will create less for everyone.
You're listening.
We do not want a world. I just got to say, we don't want a world where government provides you with all of your needs.
No, we don't, and that's the whole issue. Now, Horace Cooper is chair of Project 21, Black Leadership Network, promoting African-American values, and author of a new book, Put Y'all Back in Chains, How Joe Biden's Policies Hurt Black Americans. You mentioned Cornel West believing everything would be better off. You also point out in your book that if they go through this process and the DEI pushed all across the nation, for those who thought there might be, quote, black reparations, who believe that that's going to be an answer for everything, it's going to damage them. And yet they still don't get it and understand it.
So I have a recent piece out in the Hill newspaper. The affirmative action ruling, a great ruling, one that Project 21 submitted an amicus brief urging the court to do exactly what it ended up doing, also closes the door legally on reparations. It is just immoral, let me just say this, to say to a person, you've never owned slaves, your father didn't own slaves, your grandfather didn't own slaves, you're going to make payments. It is also immoral to say, you're the children of Michael Jackson. Your father was worth half $1 billion and has left all of his estate to you. You, according to California, would be eligible for nearly $1 million in reparations payments. That's immoral.
It's not immoral. It's laughable. It's laughable. It's laughable, and it's insane.
The affirmative action ruling, however, closes the door on any policy that says your eligibility is based on your racial identification.
All right, let me deal with an issue there. I know we're having trouble going all back right and forth, and I apologize for the delay. But since you brought that up in our time here, Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson recently was defending racial discrimination, expressing the fact that defending affirmative action in college admissions is the only way for black students have a chance, and then also adding that black physicians give better treatment to black patients than white physicians. Why do we want to continue to go through this divisive road?
Okay, so that's also laughable, but it's also reminiscent of what we saw during Jim Crow 1.0. People forget that the advocates of Jim Crow said that it was good for black America and it was good for white America to be separate. They claimed it was good that you couldn't sell a Cadillac to a black person. It was good for the black, for the white Cadillac dealer, and it was good for the black potential purchaser. When my great uncle wanted to buy a Cadillac, he just went up to Chicago and got one where they didn't operate under this, it's good for you. It actually meant, segregation actually meant black people had to pay more because they had to travel to go and get what they wanted, but also white dealers suffered because they couldn't sell as much as they would like. The same principle is true today. If you restrict the number of pilots, the number of physicians, the number of engineers on the basis of race, you hurt all groups. The better approach is to let everyone participate. Now, in the case of Justice Jackson Brown, we now know that the citation was phony. Now, it may be the case that it was her clerks, or it may be the case that it was the justice herself, but what is true is there is no study that shows that black patients do better when they have a black doctor. I can tell you this for no patient does well with an inferior doctor.
Absolutely. And there's a footnote that she was referring to. As you said, it might have been the clerk's fault, but I don't think so. It fits some of the other things she's done. And they were referring to an Association of American Medical Colleges, which is the same source that she used the first time when she was talking about we need to have less discrimination, and we need to have affirmative action in college admissions. She is the one on the court that says we need to decide you get into college based strictly upon your color.
Yes. Now, remember, in Jim Crow 1.0, that's exactly what we did. We decided you couldn't be admitted to college. It took a case before the Supreme Court involving my alma mater, the University of Texas, for the court to say, no. Your race is irrelevant. Come up with a standard, and whoever meets the standard can attend. Justice Jackson, Ketanji Jackson Brown, is saying, let's go back to that standard. Now, she says, we're going to flip it and pick the race. If it wasn't good for blacks and it wasn't good for whites with Jim Crow 1.0, how is it good for blacks or whites today?
Let me ask you a closing question the last 40 seconds or so. When you look at how Trump did do with black unemployment, and there was a great increase in it, and where we are now under the Biden administration, if you look at strictly that issue, if you look strictly at that issue, which is better for African America and for America as a whole?
A policy that encourages growth, encourages opportunity, encourages us to aspire to be the best that we can be, and doesn't judge us by our color, benefits everyone. Every dry cleaner, every airline, every physician, every single position is better served when the smartest and best person is doing the job. And if anybody who wants to acquire the service is free to do so. That's what we did under Trump. That's not what Joe Biden wants to do.
I want to thank you very much for your time, sir. I know you're on the road. Thanks for making time for us.
I appreciate the opportunity.
You bet. Horace Cooper, chair of the Project 21, Black Leadership Network, the title of the book, Put Y'all Back in Chains. Coming up, that sweetheart deal that Hunter Biden got, that's still got to be reviewed. Let's take a closer look at that when we continue. Hot enough for you? Tired of hearing that question? It's certainly hot enough to damage your lawn and plants. Allen Outdoor Solutions can put in an irrigation system, save your landscaping, and save you from having to drag hoses in this heat. I've known Steve Allen for years. That's why I put my name with Allen Outdoor Solutions. Call 314-647-4800. 647-4800. Check the website, see everything Steve can do for you. AllenOutdoorSTL.com. You can spend a lot of restless nights trying to figure out how you're going to make all those credit card payments. Why not consolidate all your debt into one manageable payment? My friends at Homestead Financial Mortgage can help with a cash-out refinance. Contact them today. Take the first step in regaining your financial freedom. Use my website, larry.homesteadfinancial.com. Take charge of your financial future. Go to my website, larry.homesteadfinancial.com. This time of year, heavy rains, high winds, they can hit. And if you have any loose shingles, even the smallest hole in your roof, you're taking a major gamble with your biggest investment. I can tell you from personal experience. Do not wait until you have water where it shouldn't be. Don't forget that John Beale has disaster crews, which can at least cover your roof until the damage can be fully repaired. Homeowner, business owner, call John Beale. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Time.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
She looked at this, and by the way, she's not interviewed any witnesses, she's not reviewed any reports, but just by looking at the face of this, just by looking at it from, with the basics, it just made no sense. It was clear that it was not a just plea agreement. And again, I've seen these over and over and over, and I've never seen anything like this ever in my career on both sides. He clearly had a sweetheart deal. She looked at it and she says, wait a minute, fellas, you're going to have to go back to the drawing board. My concern is justice, fairness, equality, and you fail. You fail on all of these points.
Failed on all points. And again, the speaker you were hearing then has the experience and the knowledge to make those statements. That was Guy Lewis, former U.S. prosecutor, talking about that sweetheart deal that the Department of Injustice made with Hunter Biden. And they came this close to having it rubber stamped and sent on its way until the judge raised the question. Are there other charges pending against Mr. Biden? And they had to answer from both sides, yes, yes, ma'am. There are other charges. And her attitude then was, well, I cannot possibly accept this because it might grant him immunity from any additional charges. Thank God for a judge who stood her ground and simply stood with justice, not political persecution and not political goals. So the Hunter Biden deal is being reworked. We don't know exactly how it's going to come back, but I will tell you this. It will not be the sweetheart deal he was expecting. And Devin Archer, testifying before members of Congress today behind closed doors, had delayed today's testimony three different times. It was my opinion, and I could be wrong, that he was delaying each time because he was waiting for the Hunter Biden deal to be settled and put away. When that fell apart, his excuses ran out, and he thought, maybe I better get in and cover my own butt. Now, you have to keep in mind that Devin Archer has always been listed as a good business associate with Hunter Biden and a good friend. There are emails back and forth between the two of them about Hunter stating, I know it's been tough to be my friend, but we're going to get through this, and I appreciate you being there for me. And then once Devin Archer had his case that he scheduled to go to prison on originally dismissed, as soon as it got dismissed for taking money due an Indian tribe and basically making profit off of their back, the case got dismissed, and he immediately reached out to Hunter and said, can I come by and see you now? Can I come near you now that I'm no longer under federal indictment and charges and conviction? And Hunter said, yes, we'll set it up. But then the case got brought back up again, and on the retry before a next court up, Devin Archer was convicted again. So he is due to serve 1 year and 1 day in prison. Over the weekend, the DOJ sent out a letter Saturday to the judge of the case saying, maybe you need to have Devin Archer report to prison. And everyone immediately said, that is direct intimidation. We discussed that in great detail in the beginning of today's program. I won't go over all of it again, but I will remind you that now suddenly the Department of Justice says, no, that was not our intent. And even Devin Archer's attorney says, we accept that that was not the intent. But we also pointed out and remind you, Devin Archer's attorney still has to make some deals with the Justice Department for his client. So he does not want to go cursing and slandering the Justice Department. That would not be good for any future deals he puts together for Devin. The Hill came out with a piece that I found extremely interesting. I've got a grandson in high school, another one who soon will be, and maybe you do as well. You have sons and our grandsons in high school. This is only specifying boys, males. No transgenders, not even females mentioned in this report. This is from The Hill, pointing out that there's a popular narrative suggesting young people are liberal and getting more liberal. And then there came a chart that surfaced suggesting 12th grade boys were overwhelmingly conservative. I know my grandsons, they're overwhelmingly conservative. The Hill piece continues, as with many posts and viral tweets, the truth was more complicated. But the numbers do say this. 12th grade boys are nearly twice as likely as conservative to identify as conservative versus liberal. That's according to a federal survey of American youth from a group titled Monitoring the Future, apparently a respected federal survey. And surveys over the last 3 years, roughly 25% of high school seniors identified as conservative are very conservative, and only 13% identifying as liberal or very liberal in those same 3 years. That is a striking shift in political views of boys, according to those following the survey. They point out as recently as the late 2000s, liberal boys occasionally outnumbered conservatives. And in the Carter era, both boys and girls leaned liberal. Now, again, this survey was primarily focusing upon boys, but there is a part that points out the share of 12th grade girls identifying as liberal did rise from 19% in 2012 to 30% in 2022. That's according to the University of Michigan, where last year's survey showed only 12% of the girls identifying as conservative. What is the intent and purpose of all this and understanding it? They are our future. I would think and hope most of us would agree that, be they identifying themselves as conservative or liberal right now, at some point they'll acknowledge they're going to think for themselves and not be led by whatever group that might be pulling them. I know, as a high schooler, I leaned conservative, more so than many of my friends, but you didn't have all this assault upon teenagers that we have now via social media, viral posts, bullying via internet, and so forth. You basically were doing it in a vacuum compared to what we have now. I pointed out to you before that in my senior year, a good friend of mine was for LBJ when he was running for president. I'm in Texas. You would think I would support LBJ, but I was supporting Barry Goldwater. So that was a clear division. Most of the students around us had little or no interest whatsoever in politics. I hear that a lot from young people today, and yet at the same time, I see more and more of them realizing that at some point I need to be involved because it will affect me. The Survey Center on American Life said the political leanings of young men have changed very little over the past 2 decades. Just last year, 43% identifying as moderate, 31% conservative, 24% as liberal. 20 years earlier, the numbers were pretty much the same. There's an NBC News poll that points out Generation Z favors liberalism over conservatism, 48-33 margin. And I would imagine that the push of wokeness is having a great factor upon that, and the push for transitioning kids into another sex. All right, coming up, one presidential primary candidate, Vivek Ramaswamy, asked if Trump can beat Biden. His answer, plus something else from him that might shock many.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Wow, that was my reaction when I walked into Napoli C, now open on the streets of St. Charles, right next door to Napoli 3. And Napoli C is like walking into a two-level submarine. Fish just outside the portholes. The menu is going to be filled with various seafood, lobster, crab. Good luck with choosing. Napoli C is now open on the streets of St. Charles. Join me at any Cafe Napoli. Clayton, Town and Country, Napoli 3 in St. Charles are right next door, Napoli C.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Do I think Trump can beat Biden in a general election in a narrow margin? To be honest, yes, I do. But I think I am the only candidate in this race, in the entire Republican primary field, who can deliver a Ronald Reagan 1980 style landslide election, a moral mandate in this election. And I think that is critically important to unite this country and frankly to drive forward the agenda that I have to shut down the administrative state, to declare independence from China. These are big steps that I want to take as the next president, and that's going to take a moral mandate to do it. And I don't think the real division is between Democrats and Republicans. I think it is between those who are pro-American and those who are anti-American. That's 80-20. That's a landslide election, and that's what I intend to deliver.
I believe Vivek Ramaswamy nailed it. It is not so much between Democrats and Republicans. It is those who are for the country or against the country. That's why I often tell folks this program primarily is not aim to be conservative nor independent and certainly not liberal, but patriotic. And there are certain things that we may disagree over, but the bottom line is, are you patriotic? Do you care about this country and our future? Or are you trying to destroy this country? Vivek Ramaswamy is now polling about 5%, way below Trump and below DeSantis. I don't know that he's going to get much more. And at this point, Trump is leading every candidate ahead of DeSantis by 30-plus points. He has overall 60% of those polled so far. But, of course, you're seeing the left continue through the state-controlled media and the weaponized Department of Justice, the FBI, and the IRS do everything they can to demonize Trump and destroy him. And I'll reassert to you, I don't care if you hate Trump or love him, you need to be voting for the man that you think can lead this country forward. Vivek Ramaswamy is not likely to get the election. I think that's pretty clear. But he was also asked about this whole system that we're seeing constantly ambushing Donald Trump. Every time there's a charge or some new question raised about Hunter Biden and Joe Biden, boom, here comes the DOJ with another charge, a superseded indictment against Trump. That just, again, to use the old phrase, stirring up a hornet's nest. You're not going to get people together. You're not going to begin to bring any kind of peace to the nation if all you want to do is destroy a political opponent and do so by weaponizing our own government. That is exactly what has happened under the Biden administration. And it was allowed to happen under the Obama administration. I mean, when they were told that the Steele dossier being pushed against Trump was a Hillary Clinton campaign trick, and they did nothing to stop it and point that out, then they also took part in allowing the DOJ, the FBI, to go about whatever they wanted to. And to that point, Vivek Ramaswamy said, if you're going to look at the standards of today, the DOJ has lowered our standard of justice.
I think that our general norm in our Justice Department is you should not convict somebody of a process crime when there was no actual underlying crime. I think that's a major problem.
So you think destroying evidence is a process crime?
I think it is, by definition, a process crime. Nobody left, right, any legal scholar will agree with me on that statement. That is, by definition, a process crime, a crime that would not have existed but for the existence of an investigation. And if we look ourselves in the mirror over the last several years, even look at the acquittals in the Gretchen Whitmer case, the fact that two people were acquitted of entrapment, I think it is a bad habit that our FBI and DOJ have gotten into, intervening and creating crimes that would not have existed but for their action.
And that's a key point. The crime was created. Now let's find a guy to fit it. Now, part of what he said, you could apply to Hillary Clinton and her email server. And when Comey came forward and said, no prosecutor would take such a case. That's because it's Hillary Clinton. They're more than willing to take such a case involving Donald Trump. Vivek Ramaswamy was asked, would you pardon Trump if you're elected president and he's found guilty? His answer, yes. But there's more to that part of the story. And we'll have that in our second hour. As always, I thank you for joining us. Remember our pledge, one nation under God.